The Very Thought of You by Flippy Spoon, read by Cookie Mom 6067. The away team made its landing on a temperate island in the southern hemisphere of the planet Chiarla, and upon transport, Pike looked around and said it reminded him of Tuscany. "Don't those just look exactly like olive trees?" Spock traipsed through the grass, following the captain to a cluster of squat trees, and scanned one of them with his tricorder, immediately noticing plump brown fruits ripening on the branches. "I would describe this area as quite similar to a Mediterranean climate, sir. However..." A wave of dizziness came over Spock, and he shook his head, having forgotten what he was going to say. An exceedingly rare occurrence. Something had pinged his telepathic senses. Not a person, and perhaps not even an entity, but something perhaps similar. He was sure, somehow, that the presence was not dangerous, whatever it was. "Spock, you okay?" Captain Pike furrowed his brow, already digging out his communicator. "Quite all right, sir," Spock insisted. "I have sensed a presence here of some kind. I would like to discover its origin." He squinted into the distance, in the direction of some ruins Uhura hiked towards, and Benga tagging along. The ruins were a circle of faded pink stone structures surrounding a large platform, though there was not much more to them than pillars and a few low walls, and out of what was left of the architecture, bright yellow flowers and palms grew. "A presence?" Pike said darkly. "That sounds vague. I don't like vague." "I will be cautious, Captain," Spock assured him. "Keep me in the loop." "Certainly." Spock made his way in the direction of the ruins along the grassy hills, a teal sea sparkling in the distance. There was something distinctly romantic about the place, and the air tasted like something familiar. Something he had only tasted once. And it made no sense that he should be tasting it in the air of Chiarla, but the memory of its taste was so... Commander Kirk was casting him a certain kind of half-smile Spock thought must be specific to him. It could have been considered a smirk, except that there was a warmth to it that precluded any sardonic attitude. "Devil may care," his mother might have said. Spock's gaze flicked back and forth between the Farragut's first officer and the remains of a tour-de-force battle he just waged on the chessboard. "Commander, your playing style is... fascinating. You demonstrate extensive knowledge of the game and a keen strategic mind, yet at times you move with no readily apparent rhyme or reason." "Well, that's not exactly true," Jim said, almost apologetic. "It's just, my own instinct, I guess. My father called my playing style jazzy." "Jazzy. Improvisational?" "Ah. Spock, do you like ice cream?" "I do not know." Spock sat up a little straighter, suddenly just a little bit nervous as the conversation moved from the safe territory of the chess game. Kirk tended to do that to him. "I have never tried it." "You've never tried ice cream?" Kirk threw up his hands in an overwrought display. "Listen, no offense, but you're half human. You gotta try ice cream. How has nobody introduced you to ice cream? Criminal. And it's synthesized anyway, so the dairy isn't real. Unless you'd rather not, of course." Kirk waited for an answer, and Spock hesitated. Occasionally, one of the crew on the Enterprise or a fellow cadet at the Academy would insist he try something commonly eaten on Earth. And sometimes the implication was that it would be better than anything on Vulcan. And just as often, the insistent human was dismissive of Vulcan food. Ice cream in particular had been offered to him a few times, and Spock declined, as it always sounded absurdly rich and not especially valuable in terms of nutrients. But he found the notion of saying no to Kirk quite impossible. "I will try it," Spock said. "Ah, now we're cooking." Kirk rose from his low seat at one of the dimly lit game tables in the port galley, and quite unnecessarily, he held out his hand to help Spock up. The port galley was playing old jazz tunes again, and the tinkling piano turned to Billie Holiday as Kirk took Spock's hand in his. Come with me, Mr. Spock. The very thought of you. Incredibly diabolically, he felt like he was agreeing to something much more than ice cream, but was uncertain what that was. When they sat at the port galley counter, Kirk sat unnecessarily close, and Spock did not move away. We'll start this the right way for you, Kirk patted his arm. First things first, flavors. Chocolate? Chocolate may cause inebriation, Spock said. Really? Oh, boy. Well, let's just file that away for later, shall we? Do you like earth fruits? Yes, Spock said immediately. He had tried a lot of different fruits back at the Academy in particular. He had not found one he did not like, with the notable exception of the papaya. Strawberries, Spock said, almost wistful. Vulcan has nothing similar to a strawberry. I am quite partial to it. A different smile grew on Kirk's face. Slow, knowing, delighted. Strawberry ice cream, Kirk whispered. Perfect. In minutes, there were two glass dessert dishes sitting in front of them. One dish held three perfectly rounded scoops of pale pink strawberry ice cream. The other dish was a hot fudge sundae, three scoops of vanilla ice cream slathered in hot chocolate sauce, a small mound of whipped cream, chopped nuts, and two cherries on top. Now, if you don't like it, Kirk said, I won't take it personally. Oh, and don't bite through it with your teeth. That's how you get a brain freeze. Brain freeze? That did not sound pleasant at all. Spock awarded this claim with a wary eyebrow, but there was no concern to be had as he took a delicate bite of the ice cream, allowing it to melt on his tongue for a moment. Strawberry. The cold creaminess took a little getting used to, but he found himself quickly taking another bite, chasing both the strawberry taste and the sensation of melting cream. You like it, Kirk declared. I do not dislike it. Kirk smiled widely and nudged his shoulder. You like it. He dug into his sundae, and Spock watched him scoop a bite with his spoon that collected a good amount of vanilla ice cream, chocolate fudge, and whipped cream, finding himself somewhat jealous of the spoon that Kirk held and wrapped his lips around, and which continually rested on his tongue. Kirk was enjoying his dessert so much he occasionally let his eyes flutter shut, and Spock took that opportunity to blatantly stare. Would you like to try this one? Spock had been caught staring. And if Kirk knew it was the man and not the ice cream Spock was interested in, he did not show it. Sharing food from one's dish was considered vulgar among most Vulcans. However, his mother would occasionally give him bites from her plate when he refused, and then become curious about whatever dish she had concocted that reminded her of home, though Amanda was not partial to sweets, and ice cream had never made an appearance. Spock experienced a flash of panic, but only nodded, and Kirk scooped him up a bite of ice cream, whipped cream, and a healthy dose of fudge, and raised it to Spock's lips. Highly unhygienic, Spock wanted to say. Inappropriate. He opened his mouth, and Kirk's eyes were on his lips as he wrapped them around the same spoon Kirk had been eating from. Spock's little hum of enjoyment was involuntary, and Kirk's gaze intensified. But the combination of icy cold vanilla and hot chocolate sauce was exceedingly pleasant, and the chocolate was rich enough to give him a faint buzz. Kirk retracted the spoon. I'm glad you like it. I do, Spock murmured. Oh, you've got... That intense gaze was fixed on him, and he could not move as Kirk slowly raised his hand, and a gentle finger touched his mouth, wiping away a dollop of whipped cream. There. Spock inwardly reared, all his blood rushing up to his head and down to his cock, simultaneously it seemed. He could not speak. It had no apparent effect on Kirk, who suddenly started talking about an atmospheric anomaly the Farragut had recently come across. He wanted Spock's scientific opinion. He always wanted Spock's scientific opinion. He was surprised Kirk had not asked him to break down the structural components of ice cream. Spock took a long time forming a thought in regards to the anomaly. He was shaken and aroused, and he wanted nothing more than to put the ice cream spoon aside and put Kirk's fingers in his mouth instead. "What are you doing here?" Mbenga's voice rang out from the ruins, startling Spock from a memory he had been replaying in his mind several times over since Jim Kirk had returned to the Farragut. Spock looked up from his tricorder and jogged in the direction of the ruckus, finding Mbenga embracing a young, dark-skinned woman, tears streaming down his face. "Rukia, I was just thinking of you." Beside them, Uhura watched, eyes wide. "I don't know why I'm here," the young woman said, though she was laughing. "I was visiting friends, a delightful trio of entities in the Lotus Nebula. They're sort of hard to describe. And then suddenly I was here." The captain appeared beside Spock, looking not exactly bothered, though he was frowning. "Spock, you know what this is?" "I believe this is Dr. Mbenga's daughter, though how she has suddenly appeared here I do not know," Spock supplied. "It may be a simulation, but..." "Scan her, would you?" Pike said. "If she's not real, I'm curious what the planet is doing. If she is real, I'm very curious."
"As am I, sir," Spock muttered,
and approached Mbenga, who chattered away with Rukia, introducing Uhura. He raised his tricorder and nodded at the doctor. "Apologies, doctor. This event is unforeseen, to say the least."
"It certainly is," Mbenga said, wiping his eyes.
Spock raised an eyebrow at his tricorder readout. The woman standing in front of him was, in fact, Rukia Mbenga. The readings were somewhat distorted, but that made sense in her case, as she had been existing as pure consciousness since leaving the Enterprise with Deborah, the life form which had taken her along with it to save her life. But there was nothing to suggest this version of Rukia Mbenga was a simulation or hallucination or a trick of any sort, and he told Captain Pike as much. Spock glanced at the captain, who regarded the happy father and daughter reunion pensively, before noticing Spock's expression. "Let's leave them be for now, then," Pike said quietly. "See how this plays out." "Captain, I suspect Rukia Mbenga's sudden arrival must have something to do with the presence I sense here. Perhaps it is telepathic in nature, yet not a type of telepathy with which I am familiar. Dr. Mbenga did state he was just thinking of her. And yet more curious, what method of transport could bring her here from such a great distance?" Pike said, "Yes, that..." "Chris! What the hell am I doing here?" Captain Pike whipped around and Spock followed his gaze to Commander Chin Riley, who stood frowning in the ruins, her hands on her hips. "Did I just transport from the bridge?" Pike blinked at Number One and intelligently said, "Huh." "Fascinating," Spock murmured. "Captain, were you just thinking of..." "Yes," Pike said quietly, "as always, but let's not get into that now." "Understood."
"Scan the perimeter," Pike said. "Follow your, spidey sense."
"Sir?"
"Never mind."
Pike clapped Spock on the shoulder, and he lurched forward a step. "I'll catch up, Number One. Keep doing what you're doing." Spock nodded and headed outside the ruins toward a field of flowers and an orchard of the fruit trees he'd noticed earlier. Yet left on his own again, his attention was split between his scientific investigation and James T. Kirk. It would have been preferable to be able to blame this split focus on the planet and its potential influence, but he was often given to thinking of Jim Kirk since Kirk had left, replaying memories of chess games and conversations, and Kirk's keen and agile mind in action, as well as other, perhaps more superficial, attentions to memories of Kirk's bright eyes and variety of smiles and pleasing jawline. Stranger was the occasional but acute feeling that Jim Kirk was meant to be there, serving with Spock in some capacity to the extent that Spock had once or twice forgotten Jim was not already a permanent member of the crew and still on board. Wasn't Jim Kirk supposed to be on the Enterprise? It now seemed wrong that he wasn't serving on it. And more than that, Spock missed him being around, and to a degree that confounded him. Oof. Thump. Spock heard the grunt and the thump coming from one of the not olive trees, and he followed the sounds, continuing to scan, though so far he had not found much more than a faint but unexplained electromagnetic field in the area. "What the hell? What the..." Spock heard scrambling, and then a figure stumbled to its feet from a tall clump of grass and wildflowers. It was Commander Kirk, barefoot, and clad only in a pair of dark red Starfleet issue workout leggings. Kirk grimaced, looking around in confusion, brushing bits of grass and flower petals from his hair. "So," Kirk muttered, "it's going to be one of those kinds of days, huh?" Instantly, Spock realized that his own Kirk-centric thoughts had just stolen Kirk from his ship, which, last Spock had heard, was stationed close to the neutral zone and nowhere near the Enterprise. Embarrassment flooded Spock, and internally he attempted to shove that emotion behind shields weakened for lack of use, as of late. Commander Kirk did not have the time to get yanked from his duties because the Enterprise's science officer couldn't help thinking about him. He was first officer on a busy ship and cared deeply about his work, which was just one of the qualities Spock so admired. Spock swallowed and made his way through the grass, approaching Kirk, who faced away, head tilted as he took in the view of a flowery field that looked out over the blue-green sea. "Commander Kirk," Spock said. Kirk whipped around and his eyes widened, a grin appearing on his face. "Mr. Spock, are you a sight for sore eyes? Perhaps you can tell me how I got here." Spock cleared his throat and said, "To some extent." He raised his tricorder and scanned Kirk, who read as perfectly solidly human. "I must assume that you were on the Farragut and have suddenly found yourself here." "Yes," Jim nodded. "Although it didn't feel like a dematerialization. One second I'm sparring with Ensign Stiller. I dodged a kick and somersaulted. The next thing I know, I'm falling out of a tree." "Have we been abducted by some alien force, Mr. Spock? What do you know?" Kirk was a bit breathless. His hair was a little damp as he pushed it back with one hand as a bead of sweat slid down his throat. This added to the air that smelled of strawberry ice cream, which made no more sense than anything else so far on Chiarla, and the warm sun on Spock's face, which also made Kirk's eyes sparkle, were not at all helping him to focus. "No," Spock said quietly. He fixed his eyes out on the sea, unable to meet Kirk's stare as he confessed, "But you have been brought here against your will, Commander, and for that I must apologize, as I believe the fault is mine." "You brought me here?" Kirk crossed his arms, though his expression was more curious than perturbed. His posture accentuated his pectoral muscles and his biceps when Spock glanced at him and he swallowed. "How?" "You have been brought to the planet Chiarla in the Karna system, though by what means I cannot say. The planet has not been populated for several thousand years, according to our surveys," Spock explained. "Captain Pike, Dr. Mbenga, Ensign Uhura, and myself have been here investigating. I have experienced a potentially telepathic presence here, though I sense nothing malevolent. Just minutes ago, Dr. Mbenga, while thinking of his daughter, seemed to have made her appear here physically, though she was a great distance from our ship or this planet, likely several years away, even at maximum warp. The same happened with Captain Pike and Commander Chin Riley. I believe there is a benign power or entity on this planet which has caused this phenomenon. Presumably, the thoughts of the person who then appeared were quite persistent and intense." "Spock?" Affectionate, perhaps. Obviously, in very different ways. However, Spock was still staring at his tricorder, but he heard Kirk coming closer and looked down to see Jim's toes in the grass opposite his boots. "Was Ensign Uhura thinking about me?" "She may have been," Spock said. "I have not inquired as to. Did you just happen to be thinking about me before I appeared?" Perhaps it was the strawberry ice cream air, or an effect of the telepathic entity, which made Spock say, "Yes. But I have not stopped thinking about you since your departure from the Enterprise, Commander." A slow, sideways smile spread across Kirk's face, and he ducked his head, seemingly quite pleased. "Mr. Spock, had our positions been reversed, my thoughts would have made you appear inside of a minute." Spock blinked at him and said, "Ah. You probably have sensors to read and everything, Kirk took Spock's hand and walked backwards into the field of tiny purple and white flowers, his tousled hair blown by the breeze, and Spock breathed in, stumbling for a moment and righting himself by pressing a hand to Kirk's chest. "God," Kirk murmured. "Come here." Kirk tugged him forward by his collar and kissed him, and Spock was lit up inside out, dropping his tricorder, the weight of it tugging the strap around his neck, which Jim's left hand came up to knead as their mouths slid together. Spock's hands were frozen at his sides until the tiniest moan from Kirk spurred him on, and he slid his hands up Kirk's bare back, chasing the taste of his tongue and the buzzing connection between them that sparked and sang. Kirk lost his balance and fell into the field, and Spock fell with him, Kirk's legs wrapping around him, everything around them drifting away on the wind as they kissed and tumbled in the grass in the sun until... "Not actually what I meant by investigate, Mr. Spock." Spock and Kirk parted as if separated by an electric shock at the sound of Pike's voice, and Spock flushed, squinting up at Pike, who loomed over them. Spock pressed his lips together, already missing Kirk's mouth on his, but when he glanced over, Jim winked, nudging Spock's boot with his foot. Just as quickly, Kirk leapt to his feet and stood at parade rest. "Commander Kirk," Pike said, "you've joined us too, I see. Now I can't imagine who might have brought you here." Spock winced. Commander Chen Riley came up beside him. "I'm sure we could use the help on this one as long as you're here, Commander Kirk. If you're not too distracted, that is." "Captain Pike," Kirk said, nodding. "Commander Chen Riley, interesting planet you found here." "Yeah, I'm sure you think so," Pike said, and Number One stifled a chuckle. "Looks like the ship's sensors already have more data on this phenomenon than we do. We're returning to the ship. Rukia Mbenga is able to return to the life form known as Deborah on her own, though I believe she'll be enjoying a visit with her father first. Commander Kirk, I guess you're just going to have to hitch a ride with us until we can get you back to the Farragut, but that's going to be 2 weeks at least. I'd apologize for the trouble, but I'm not sure it's putting you out too much." He cast Spock a knowing look. Kirk cleared his throat, shifty on his feet. Yeah, I'll just have to muddle on through, I guess. "Unfortunate," Spock murmured, but could not contain his small smile as Kirk's hand came to rest at the small of his back. The end.